This episode of the Crack Podcast is sponsored by Foot Cardigan. Starting at $9 a month, you can get a pair of awesome socks mailed to your front door once a month for you or your loved one. And you can get 10% off your purchase if you go to footcardigan.com and use the code HOLIDAY16. That's the word holiday followed by the numbers 1 and 6. So get something fun for yourself or someone you love this December. Once again, that's footcardigan.com and the code HOLIDAY16. You ever been watching a movie and thought, man, why don't they just fix the problem with this perfectly ordinary piece of technology we all have access to? I'm looking at you, the Empire. Great job protecting your one vulnerability. I mean, literally, they could have used like a chain link fence to just make the torpedo blow up on the outside. But anyways, tech pioneer VMware had the same idea as all of us when they were watching some sci-fi classics. So they created a new podcast called IT is Greater Than Sci-Fi, where they drop a couple of IT guys into movies like The Terminator, Star Wars, and The Matrix to fix the plots. So once again, it's called IT is Greater Than Sci-Fi, and you can download it at vmware.com/radius/sci-fi or iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Crack Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Crack. And this week, we're listening to Johnny Sunshine by Liz Phair, which is one of my favorite songs off her wonderful 1993 concept-ish album, Exile in Guyville, which is a song-by-song response to the also great Exile on Main Street, which, like a lot of Rolling Stones music, pretty profoundly misogynistic. If you're not familiar with Exile in Guyville, you should definitely go check it out. I guess it's over 20 years old now, so classic rock. But it's an appropriate album to be listening to today because we're talking about a subject that men and women tend to view through very different eyes: sexual consent. The idea that both parties involved in a sexual act are willing participants, or ought to be, that one of them isn't accidentally making the other one do something they're not comfortable with. Seems like it should be a fairly straightforward idea. Basically, just means that before you do something sexual to another human being's body, you should ask them if they want you to do that thing that you want to do. And then, if they say no, you should believe them. That's it. So, shouldn't be too complicated, right? How could us guys get this wrong? Now I want to play for you a segment from the Rush Limbaugh show from the days following the Donald Trump scandal, when he was caught on tape bragging about grabbing women's pussies without asking. Limbaugh brought up this idea of consent, which would seem to be very valuable in this context. Let's hear what he has to say.
You know what the magic word, the only thing that matters in American sexual mores today is one thing. You can do anything. The left will promote and understand and tolerate anything as long as there is one element. Do you know what it is? Consent. If there is consent on both or all three or all four, however many are involved in the sex act, it's perfectly fine, whatever it is. But if the left ever senses and smells that there's no consent in part of the equation, then here come the rape police.
All right. Now, in case you couldn't hear him at the end there because he was so exasperated he was literally running out of breath, he said, but if the left ever senses and smells that there's no consent in part of the equation, then here come the rape police, otherwise known as the regular police, to arrest you for rape because you just raped someone. Now, that seemed pretty strange to me, and I don't play that to suggest that any rational man is that big of an asshole, but Jason Pargin and I are going to talk about sexual consent from the perspective of two seemingly rational human beings. I think we're rational. Just two people who grew up attached to a penis. Not the same one, obviously, different ones. We each had our own. But we're going to talk about why sexual consent is a trickier concept for most men to get than you might expect if you're not one of us, didn't have a penis growing up. We'll talk about why mainstream movies taught us to approach sexual encounters in exactly the wrong way. Here I'm talking about like Han Solo or Indiana Jones or James Bond or any other male movie hero who were always sexually assaulting women into falling in love with them. It was also there in the stuff that just our culture valued and thought it was okay to value. Like, we'll talk about, I think, the Slave Leia costume, probably the number one male sexual fantasy in the 80s up through the year 2000 and all of them. Jason pointed out in his article we're discussing today that that scene isn't just considered hot because Carrie Fisher's showing some skin. We'd seen lots of movie stars and lots of bikinis by that point. The reason that one seemed so hot was because she didn't choose to wear that. She's a high-class woman who has been forced to wear that, like some sort of sex slave. Not as fun when you put the word sex in front of it there. But that's what it was. That's what that fantasy was about, right? Nobody asks their girlfriend to dress up as Liam Neeson's daughter when she's being auctioned off at the end of Taken, because we don't like the idea of sex slavery. But put it in a fantasy universe, and suddenly we're pretty cool with a woman being made to do something she doesn't want to. Also, speaking of Taken, even that movie chooses to depict sex trafficking as something that happens. It's done by Eastern European mobsters and European cities. But did you know that there are 100,000 sex slaves in America, like right now, and half of them are from America? They're not like smuggled in. They're just captured from your hometown, presumably. They might have gone to high school with you. You want to know a real hotbed for selling women into sexual slavery? Atlanta, apparently. But we like to think of that stuff as happening in faraway countries by people we'd never run into. There are these phrases like rape culture and the male gaze that growing up I'd always lumped in with this cartoonish version of feminism, like starring angry, short-haired women who hate men. But we're going to talk to cracked writer-performers Katie Stull and Carmen Angelica, who are two women who couldn't be less hateful and who have long hair, about why this stuff does matter. And if you're a guy who this all sounds crazy or annoying to, stick around. This stuff does matter, and I think you'll be convinced of that by the end. We were exposed to some pretty harmful ideas and messages from the time we were children. So I hope you enjoy it and learn as much as I did, and I'll be back at the end for some final thoughts and some footnotes. Talk to you guys. In studio by Carmen Angelica.
Hello.
Hi. And Katie Stolt.
Hi, guys.
And on the phone by Jason Pargin, who writes on the site as David Wong.
Hello, everyone.
So, this is an episode that I think we were going to record the day after the election, but things got weird.
Other priorities were.
Yeah. So we ended up talking about the election instead. But this is based on a couple things, based on a article that you wrote about a month ago now, Jason, and then a couple videos that Katie has made about consent as a just a general philosophical concept. I think the two things, if we're going to lay out a thesis at the outset, I would say the way I would describe your article, Jason, would be kind of explaining why guys have some of the unhealthy attitudes they have towards women and unhealthy ideas about consent. And then, Katie, I think your videos are sort of explaining from a female perspective, yeah, like why it can be so frustrating.
Yeah.
Your video is called How to Tell If a Girl is DTF.
That's right, DTF.
What do those letters stand for?
We're podcasting, so I can, yeah, again, there's no censorship.
Yeah.
Means down to fuck.
Whoa! Well,
you said it.
Totally misunderstood that video.
Apparently a lot of people did.
Right. Down to frown?
Down to frown. Yeah. Down to frolic.
Right. But probably makes the most sense, Jason, to start with your article and kind of where you were coming from with your article.
Well, if people can remember about 200 Trump scandals ago, there was the thing that, and this is not about him, but the thing that launched it was the controversy. He had been caught on an open mic making these comments to another guy about all the things that now I hope everyone hearing this has remembers, but if you've forgotten under the avalanche of things that have happened since then, because it feels like 5 years ago, talking about, you know, you when you're a star, you can approach women, they just let you do it, and you can just grab them right by the pussy, and they don't care, they let you, and you know, obviously not consent, not a big part of the, well, yeah, when you're a big shot, you know, they don't care, or it doesn't matter if they care.
Right. Or you can get away with ignoring the concept of consent.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the aftermath, his defense or his surrogate's defense was, this was just locker room talk, meaning kind of just guys goofing around, you know, being, you know, kind of boastful or whatever. I expected the response to that would be, well, of course, this is the way guys talk when they're around other guys. But you are running for president and you are a 70-year-old man and a role model. That, to my surprise, was not the response. The response everywhere I heard was, I have never heard such talk among any men in any locker room I've ever been in. And that, I am not saying those people are lying. They had very different experiences than I had, because in my life, in both in the way men talk to each other when they're not in a professional environment or where there's not other women around. Yep, they say things like this. They think things like this. And more importantly, there is a reason for it that does not excuse it. These are awful attitudes. My point is, we raise boys and still raise boys to have these awful attitudes.
Yeah.
So first thing I would like to ask, Jack, you've spent a lot of time in locker rooms.
Almost constantly.
In your life, due to your background that we don't need to explain any further than that.
I was raised in a bathroom.
In your time in locker rooms, around athletes, around all these things, have you or have you not heard equally vulgar things in men referencing women, what they want to do to women, whatever?
Yeah, I've definitely heard that sort of thing from, yeah, professional athletes, would you believe it?
What? Yeah.
And now I will name names. No, but...
Last up.
Yeah. Weirdly, I do think it tends not to be, like, in high school, which you would think is where you would hear it, like, I didn't hear it that much. Mm-hmm. Maybe because I went to, like, a very liberal high school in Massachusetts. But even in my basketball locker rooms in Kentucky, like, I didn't hear it that much. I'm not totally sure why, but yeah, when I was around, my dad's a basketball coach, and being around college basketball locker rooms and NBA basketball locker rooms, like, not my dad wasn't sitting there being like, hey, Jack, but overhearing what players talk about and stuff. Yeah, there's some unhealthy attitudes toward women.
Yeah, I think that I was not surprised by what he said, or that people justify it and say boys will be boys and this is normal. Like, I get that. I'm surprised that it's okay for this to come out and people to justify it. I'm shocked that we still I guess shocked is the wrong word, yeah. but that was disappointing.
It's hurt. Yeah, it's hurt. It's hurtful because, you know, as a woman, it's yes, we know that there are things said and maybe not necessarily meant, but the fact that they're said sometimes is like a leading up to doing. And that's what's scary. And in his case, it's definitely, I mean, he's been accused of assault on
so many
occasions.
Times. So many specific examples.
It was just him saying it. It was him saying
and
exactly.
And you thought that
of.
More people would be outraged and find it unacceptable, and plenty of people did, but not that many.
I will qualify that I had never heard anybody brag about sexually assaulting people in any of the locker rooms I had been in, which is essentially what he was doing.
I've heard that. I've heard it expressed as a wish many, many times. I've heard her dressing like that. She's begging to be raped many, many times. Now, some of this is a class thing. Some of this is an error. I mean, remember, I believe the oldest person on this in this conversation.
I'm 65.
The producer, Brett is 78. But so I went to high school. You know, I grew up in the 80s. And this is in the Midwest in a lower class, whatever you would want to call it, rural small town. And that's one reason why I had no friends. I didn't fit in very well there. Even. But then the case I make in the article is that pop culture absolutely, even to this day, raises kids. It's not just that forcing the issue is sexy, you know, because I've got in the article, I have these ludicrous examples. Like I have an entire, and we'll go through some of them. We have many queued up here, but that on retrospect, like now as a 41-year-old man looking back at them and see Indiana Jones using his whip to whip the woman who has spurned him back to him, and this makes her love him. It, like, each time it's not just that forcing the issue is sexy, it's that women secretly want you to do it, to the point that the examples in the article are violent. Like James Bond, he physically fights this woman into submission, and then she rewards him with consent. Like, you know, like, well, you have now proven yourself worthy. I watched that at one time as a kid and thought, yeah, that's how the world works. You know, I'm 11 years old. Yeah, this is what I can expect from the adult world. Because again, in that time and place, remember, this is a culture where your parents do not talk to you about sex. You know, my mother is, you know, evangelical Christian. So my education comes from three places. Hollywood, you know, what I see in movies and TV, pornography, which was difficult to get in the pre-internet era, but we found a way. and from my peers, most of my sex education came from older boys on the playground and in the locker rooms. None of those three had healthy attitudes toward women.
Yeah.
You know, none of those three prioritized consent. And Hollywood, I think, was worst of all. I can't emphasize enough how shameful they make it to not force the issue. And I think you got some of this in the responses to that video, Katie, that, so if I don't do these things, then I'll just be alone then. I'll just be a virgin forever.
Right.
That's what I was taught.
Wow. I guess, consent, I feel like, is oddly recent in conversation. Because,
sure,
like, you look at movies, for sure. I remember The Mummy. They were constantly tricking the main lady to kiss people. Like, guys were just like, kiss, like, forcing kisses. And like,
I have not seen that movie, and now, like, I have such a weird
rewatch it
in my mind.
Rewatch it, and it's just them constantly like forcing kisses. And then 16 Candles, there's a scene that I rewatched recently, and it was just the boyfriend of this girl gives, quote unquote, the girlfriend who is drunk, who's blackout drunk, who can't see straight and can't recognize people, to this nerdy guy. And he's like, he's me and I'm him. And then the nerdy guy wakes up with the girl and she's like, did we have sex? And he's like, I think so. And she's like, did I like it? He's like, I don't know. And she's like, I think I did. And I'm like, no.
I don't think you did, honey.
You didn't. You couldn't think it. You can't remember. You can't remember. You can't say you did. So to me, it is like this is like a very recent conversation of like, oh, consent doesn't just mean like you said in your article, like a guy in an alley with a knife. It means like taking into consideration
yeah.
a woman's want and how she wants this to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, these are all, you know, older examples, but it's still very prevalent in the media that we consume, yes. you know, and that's surprising and also sometimes hard to notice. And that's even for me, like, you know, now I've got my, you know, my consent goggles on, so I'm looking out for it, but it's all over the shows that we see, you know, yeah. Mad Men.
I mean, there's been a transition. I think it's easier for women because I feel like we have been trained to a degree, at least younger. I remember being like, oh, guys shouldn't ask to kiss you. But then you're also like, but I do want them to kiss me when I want them to kiss
yeah.
me.
Right. Yeah.
And that was taught.
Yeah. I think that, Jason, you talk about growing up and how all of this has affected how you approach sex and consent and interacting with women. But I think that's true for us, too. I think that for a little while, I certainly assumed that men need to be the dominant person and aggressive, and that's what I should want. But instead, what that made sex is scary. That made men scary. That made me scared to go on dates. That made me nervous and incapable of being myself.
And now what's good is the conversation is around and like and I think a lot more women are starting to feel like I don't have to feel that way.
Yeah.
But it's a transition on both sides for sure.
Yeah.
So you released a video that was like how to tell if a girl is down to fuck.
Yeah.
And the answer was basically, you know, ask her
and she'll say,
maybe she'll
yeah.
tell you. And as Jason said, guys' response was, you know, what? That's suicide. Like, I'll never, yeah. I'll die alone if I ask, go around
right.
asking girls. They, for some reason, changed it to, what, I'm supposed to walk up to a stranger
yeah.
on the street? It's like, no, like, we're talking
no,
about people who you're in the
you've
process.
You've gotten a date,
of,
you've hung out, right. you're home.
Also, like, who's walking up to strangers on the street and
yeah.
asking that? You're,
right.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works. How to ask girls on a date is a different video.
Different right. video.
But I think guys are frustrated because they have been told this thing. Like, one of the primary objections is girls don't want you to ask them, and that might be true in some very few cases, but guys have been told their entire lives, you know, Jason, you use the example of Han Solo, which is, for some reason, it's like burned in my mind from growing up and having seen Star Wars so many times, but it had never occurred to me until I put my consent goggles on that he and Leia's romance is entirely forced.
Her video was specifically in response to a bunch, many, many articles on the internet
mm-hmm.
that are advice to guys of how to detect if a woman likes you. And it's all this weird, like, reading body language.
Yep.
Like, if, well, if she's licking her lips, what she's trying to do is she's trying to hint that she wants you to kiss her because she's, like, trying to draw attention to her mouth
mm-hmm.
as if women have developed these series of secret signals they send out, but it shows the anxiety that guys feel because it's all about, well, like, yeah, but how can I tell? And the thing with examples like Han Solo, which I wish we could pause the podcast and make everybody listening to this go watch the scene when he and Leia first kiss in Empire Strikes Back, where she's been spurning him for a movie and a half, and now they're on the Millennium Falcon and are sealed in there, and she has no ability to leave. And they're stalled in space, or I don't know if this is after they've escaped the giant space worm or whatever, but it's around that part of the movie. And she's working on something, and he comes up behind her and puts his arms around her, like he's trying to, ostensibly like he's trying to help her, but he's clearly like invading her personal space. And she physically shoves him off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an aggressive act because, you know, on top of everything else, she's a soldier. She's a, you know, she's a warrior. She's royalty. She's a badass. Like, on top of everything else, that relationship, like, you know, she prides herself on not being that type of girl. And then he just keeps pressing the issue. And so she turns around and he's like got her backed up against a wall and he starts like rubbing her hands inside his hands. And she says, stop that. And he's like, why? Or something to that effect. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, and keeps doing it. And she says, stop that again. And then he goes into this spiel like Like, well, you know, you like me. You like rough guys like me, blah, blah, blah. And then she starts to explain why she doesn't, and she likes nice guys. And then he cuts her off with a kiss. And then he's got her head pressed up against a wall, and she sort of kisses him back or whatever. And then C-3PO comes and interrupts him, and then she escapes. And then that is the beginning of their blooming romance.
That's crazy.
That is a scene from a sexual harassment training video. Like what you just described, like just go back point by point. Every single one of those things is a thing I've seen in sexual harassment training videos and like scoffed at and been like, ha, yeah, like anybody's going to do that. But that is a very famous scene in a movie every guy has seen, to the point that if aliens were aware of our affection for Star Wars, they would think like we had to memorize it. And it never occurred to me that that was really severely unhealthy. So I think that's why guys are coming at this consent thing with their guard up a little bit. They're like, what are you talking about? We've been told our whole lives. But from women's perspective, something that I think guys underrate is, well, first of all, what you guys just mentioned, which is like that sometimes you're physically scared and just being nice because you don't want to be harmed. Mm-hmm. But also, we had an article by Christina Hsu recently about like things that women want. She wrote in the intro about how like the only way this is treated in popular culture is in a Mel Gibson movie, which like had a few details slightly off. About what women actually want. And
what?
Yeah, but she pointed out that women aren't even believed when they go to the doctor and say, these are my symptoms. The doctor will send them away or just disbelieve. I've had, my wife is a doctor, and I've had doctors explain something to me when I'm in the room with her. Like, yeah. I'm the only person, and Carmen just gave a look like that's completely unsurprising, but
I rolled my eyes.
I think that's important for context, for where both sides are coming from, is that this is not just a isolated issue for women. This is the most vulnerable, high stakes situation where they're once again, what they say is being ignored, and that's something they live their whole lives with.
I mean,
I don't disagree.
That's nail on the head, Jack.
I will say, unless you're like in an agreed upon thing and you're like, the safety word's banana.
Great safety word, by the way.
Thank you.
Insight into Carmen's life.
Hello. No, I think people think that women are coy all the time. And and like, I'm not.
No.
I will, if I'm like, no, I don't want that coffee. Like, I don't want it. If I'm like, no, I don't want
to
do
it. If we treat women like we believe their answers, were empowered to be honest with what we mean. And this just popped back in my mind. Yes, people will say like, oh, it's unsexy to say, do you want to have sex? No, that's not unsexy. You know what? That is super hot. That's so cool. When someone feels confident enough to ask that, that's not a turnoff in any capacity. And if she's someone that doesn't like to be asked and you do, that's not going to ruin anything. She's not going to be like, well, you've killed the mood. Sex is off the table now.
But if she's like, no, then you've heard it. And like, you need to stop. And or if like, even also on the sense of like, if it's somebody's like, do you want to have sex? That's also like, great. Now I know I'm ready. And like, we can move forwards.
Like,
this.
I know where we're going. I know what's happening. There's no questions in my mind.
Yeah. Cool.
But as Jason's article points out, there's a reason that guys who are raised on popular culture think that that is a bad question to ask.
Totally.
He pointed out this old sitcom where a character says nothing's less sexy than when a guy asks if he can kiss you.
It's actually my good friend on that show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You are friends with the actress who said that.
Yeah, she's one of my best friends.
Because it was New Girl from 2012. Yeah. It wasn't actually an old sitcom.
Episode written by a team of male writers.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the trick, is that in all of these movies where, you know, the woman is like, oh, you're right. Now that you, like in Good God and Revenge of the Nerds, where the nerd puts on the costume of her boyfriend and then performs oral sex on her. And then once she realizes it's the nerd, it's like, oh, I see. This is what I wanted all along. You just had to show me what I really wanted. It's like a dude wrote both of those parts. It sounds like such a dumb thing. People know movies are fake. But pop culture did raise me. And the reason why a lot of the examples I'm citing are old, and Empire Strikes Back, you know, it's 1980, which is not ancient history, but the stuff you see in your formative years, it's hard to deprogram that. It's hard. To this day, like, a lot of my attitudes towards women are garbage. And I resent the way I was raised so much. Because I can tell that affects the way I think and the way I talk to people. But the thing you're talking about, how men assume women are always being coy or saying the opposite of what they mean. What I'm about to say, this may be super obvious to you guys, but in those formative years, from age, whatever, 11 until 16, you know, when you go from being a child to, you know, going through the hormonal changes, whatever the scientific word for that is, they probably don't have a word.
Puberty?
Females mature faster than males, right? At an era when females are starting to put on makeup and starting to have some awareness of, like, how social circles work and that sort of thing, boys generally are still, like, wearing shirts with, like, just a band on the, like, they don't know to bathe regularly. Like, the women seemed like they were, like, 3 years ahead of me, which is why in high school you see so many guys date younger. Like, you're matching maturity levels there, right? Like a 16-year-old guy and a 13-year-old girl or whatever. Like, that's, it's age 16, he's still a 13-year-old girl. I'm generalizing, but that was my experience. So there's a period during your formative years where the girls in class seem to acquire magical powers that are borderline psychic. Because things like their magical ability to detect when you're unsure of yourself, of when you're nervous, the fact that they're really good at detecting your lies, but you can't tell when they're lying, all of their abilities, the things you acquire where you start to pick up on, like, social cues and that sort of thing, they seem to get that first. So there is this period where all of your hormones, for the very first time, you have these very confused feelings toward all these girls that transforms them. Because there are girls who you may have grown up with. You may have known this person since you were 3. You know, you've known this person since you were a toddler. And all of a sudden, they magically transform from person you've known since forever to a piece of meat you want to consume hormonally. There's this hunger, and they become a different person. They're acting different. The things you used to do together, used to say to each other, is completely different. The jokes you used to make are different. Or if, you know, things like you used to, young boys and young girls, like, wrestle with each other and punch each other. And then there's suddenly a point where it's like, that's not cool anymore. You can't just, you know, grab them or do these things. And things get very weird. And again, growing up in my experience, where there's no one really explaining it to you. Like, the sex ed stuff is all about, like, STDs and that sort of thing. It's not, like, explaining socially, look, the game has changed. Mm-hmm. And women become terrifying because they can read your mind. And they are playing a game that you don't understand. So I'm showing up to school in, like, a t-shirt with, like, a picture of, like, a professional wrestler on it or something. And, like, my hair is messy because I'm just trying to keep it from, so that my hat stays on or whatever. Like, I'm not, like, you're still a kid. And suddenly the girls are wearing perfume. And more importantly, they're having these conversations that are like a foreign language. I once saw a girl in my freshman year of high school, like, she burst into tears over some issue with another girl who had an outfit first, and this other girl started wearing the outfit. And this created some sort of a social uproar in their circle of friends that created factions with, like, it was all, like, these people are aliens.
Well, I think
so.
Jason's describing how he still feels.
Yeah. Okay.
So respond to this. You guys are aliens with psychic powers,
okay,
right?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm like, okay.
The psychic powers, true.
I definitely see how, like, every teenager, no matter what gender, you think you are the center of the world and that everybody's thinking about you and that everybody's psychic and knows what you're thinking and knows when you're upset and knows when you're neurotic and it's not different for girls. And we might think you seem like we're more mature. And we are in some ways.
It has to be worse, if anything. It has to be because of the world you're growing up in.
I'm not psychic. I've never been psychic.
Shit. That's why we hired you.
Oh, no. I mean, well, she's so psychic. Bitches ain't shit and they ain't say nothing. 100 motherfuckers can't tell me nothing. I bees in the trap, beat bees in the trap.
I bees in the trap, beat bees in the trap. Hey guys, we're listening to Bees in the Trap by Nicki Minaj, who just one of my favorite artists, someone I take my cues from when it comes to how to talk to and about women. No, she's awesome. And like Billie Ho in White Men Can't Jump, I think she's better at what she does when she's angry. And that's just an emotion that the subject of this episode sort of stokes in me, like that thing about women not being believed by their doctors is infuriating. I was so mad on behalf of my wife when that doctor spoke to me instead of her when we were getting her checked out for an injury on her body, not mine. I was like, not only is it just very clear after a few seconds in the same room with us that my wife has just way more on the ball than me, but she's a doctor, and we've told you she's a doctor, brah. Meanwhile, I call doctors brah. But we recently ran an article about how some 1950s era stereotypes like still shine through in modern medical care. There's Wall Street Journal article, so conservatives, not a liberal magazine for cucks, but a conservative paper estimated that tens of millions of women live with pain because their doctors have diagnosed their pain as being all in their head. When a man reports to a doctor with heart disease symptoms, their doctor sends them to a cardiologist 62% of the time. With women, 31%, half as much, because they're more likely to be referred to the psychologist or asked follow-up questions about whether they're under a lot of stress at work. It used to be called hysteria, back when doctors thought that female illness was caused by their delicate constitution and crazy lady emotions, but now doctors will just call it psychosomatic, or will say that the women are suffering from stress, and women know this and therefore are less likely to seek medical relief for pain because they know their doctor will accuse them of making it up. And when women who are under stress have cardiovascular disease, doctors will miss the disease 75% of the time because they'll just assume it can all be attributed to worrying. It's either that or she's suffering from a wandering womb. You know how women are. If they aren't worrying too much, they're misplacing their dang ovaries. Anyways, hope you enjoy this song from a motherfucker who is not about to misplace her ovaries, and then enjoy these words from our sponsors. Man, I've been did that. Man, I've been popped out. And if she ain't trying to give it up, she get dropped out. Let me bust that UE. Bitch, bust that open. Might spend a couple thou just to bust that open. Rip it out. This episode of the Crack Podcast is sponsored by Indochino, the only suit company who teaches you how to take your own measurements, so the next time you go shopping and a salesman asks you, you won't just mumble to yourself, "14?" And just try and guess based on their reaction if you're in the right vicinity. Not that you'd ever need to leave your house to go suit shopping again, because at Indochino.com, you can custom design your own suit and have it sent directly to your door. Like you've got Q from James Bond in your computer. Disclaimer, Indochino suits don't come equipped with lasers or explosives or poison darts. But here's how it works. You can go to Indochino.com, or you can stop by one of their 9 North American showrooms. Then you pick from hundreds of fabrics and patterns and customize everything from lapels to buttons to jacket lining. And from there, you just submit your measurement, and in 4 weeks, your fancy new suit arrives. And here's the deal. This week, Cracked listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 when you enter Cracked at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price, and you get free shipping too. So once again, that's Indochino.com and use Cracked at checkout to get any premium suit for $389 with free shipping. This episode of the Cracked Podcast is sponsored by Books. That's B-O-U-Q-S. Sons, daughters, husbands. This is an announcement just for you. Are you struggling to find something for mom this Christmas because she says she doesn't want anything this year and, quote, the only present she wants this year is you? Well, first of all, you have a lovely mom. She's adorable. But we have a genius idea for you, a bouquet of flowers from the Books. Think about the points you'll earn with the in-laws if, while you're staying with them, an amazing bouquet of flowers arrives. So many points. Prices start at just $40, which is incredible. And unlike all those other flower sites, you're not swindled by hidden fees and upcharges. And when you register with Books, you'll get free weekday shipping. How amazing is that? So here's the deal. Listeners can now get $15 off any bouquet at Books.com/cracked. That's Books.com/CRACKED. And then enter the code cracked at checkout. And remember, you'll get free weekday shipping too. So get something nice for that special someone this Christmas, or do it just because. That's Books.com/cracked and enter cracked at checkout. What they say about me? How no man fuck this on your biscuit. If I get hit swinging on a big bitch, how no man I'm shitting on your whole life. The whole concept that you still hear in like songs and stuff today about, you know, well, females lie, whatever, you know. That's where that's born, because you just feel like they're playing chess while you're playing checkers. And so the whole thing about, you know, you're still a kid, you're still at an age where you just blurt out whatever you're thinking. And then the first time, you know, you have a girl approach you and say, well, you know, you should ask her out. And I'm like, she doesn't like me. And she's like, yeah, she totally does. She's, you know, that's why she dropped her pen and made you pick it up. It's like, what? Like, what? There's a game being played that I don't, you know, that I don't understand, which is people saying what they, not saying what they mean. Like, that's just the adult world. That's not women being deceivers. That's just, it just, there's a period where you feel like women got there first. And it is very frustrating and scary. This is why, how many people on this podcast watch the show Stranger Things?
Yeah. Everyone here, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's why the little girl who doesn't know how the world works, that's why that's a lovable character. Because every 11-year-old boy wishes he had an 11-year-old girl who was like that. She has to be taught about the world. See, she's not scary because she doesn't have that girl's thing where she's very, like, she's, you know, very cynical and she's very ahead of you. Here, the girl has to be taught what a dress is. The girl has to be taught how to do her hair. And so she's not so far ahead of the curve. The movie with the mermaid Splash, like, you see this trope a lot. The female who's very attractive, you know, or lovable because she's ignorant of how the world works. That's what a guy wants is a girl. This is why, one of the reasons why guys fantasize about younger, a lot of times it's not youth they want, it's innocence. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're scared that this, like, she's got my number and she's going to be, like, ahead of me or whatever.
Well,
she's
going to
know
might,
all my tricks.
And she might say no.
Right.
And yeah. Mean it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think that's a big thing about consent. And I think it's a fear of hearing no, and rejection. Taking it seriously. Like, I think especially you dealt with it, Katie, with a lot of the comments of like, well, I'm going to be alone forever. What am I going to do?
Right.
And it's like, you're going to listen. You're going to really listen.
Yeah.
And even if it sucks, even if it hurts to hear somebody be like, I'm not interested in you that way.
Yeah. Well, what would you rather? She pretends. Yeah. And like, this is how we get into this mess. And this follow-up that hasn't been released yet, I do address that a little bit, like saying, okay, but if you ask and you're told no, whether it's sex, whether it's a date, okay, that's fine. A woman will be grateful that you asked, that you treated them like a human and value their opinion and what they have to say. And it doesn't mean anything about you.
In my experience, the one thing that can make you more successful with women as a guy is like not fearing rejection
at
all, and just like being like, oh, you said no, okay, I'll move on to this other thing, which, like,
I mean, isn't that the best life advice in general.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I guess that's true.
I think in general, like, we all want to be with somebody who wants to be with us. So hearing no outright, it hurts for a second, but it's way better in the long run.
Yeah.
Guys are such pussies. We just fear that little bit of pain so much that we'll go to like huge lengths to... No, I'm saying this about myself in particular. I think that's part of it, that guys fear emotional anguish so much that they like kind of want to make it go away. And I also think that they have the ability to make it go, or at least the ability to pretend like there is this alternate reality where you don't have to ask because women don't want you to ask. And it goes so deep. I mean, it's like, you know, Sleeping Beauty and Snow White both fall in love by being kissed while they're in comas. Mm-hmm. The visual grammar of it. This is something that like gets into kind of film theory stuff, but I think there's a way to make it tangible at a very basic level. Like, you'll sometimes hear people talk about like films objectifying women and the male gaze. And it's just basically a lot of movies that we grow up on are directed by men. And so the camera goes where men's eyes would go. So that ends up being a situation where men are the actors. Like, they do the action and women are the objects of that action. It's like a very basic visual grammar of how movies work, that you're always looking through, or at least if you grew up in the 80s, you were always looking through the eyes of men. And not only are you seeing what the man would want to look at, but the man's also like conjuring everything that's happening in front of him as if in a dream, like he gets to decide what happens. Mm-hmm. I was like, for some reason, this made me think of the part in Die Hard where the terrorists come and there's just this gratuitous part where there's a couple in an office having sex and a woman like is dragged out of the office and like her boobs are like bouncing around. And it's just like a really cruel thing that I never like thought of as cruel, but it's like, that's what it means to be objectifying. Like, the male gaze wants to see that and can look at that because it's an R-rated action movie. And so that's what happens. It's as deep as, like, in the same way that like language determines how your thoughts operate and grammar determines how your thoughts operate. Like, I think most of us grew up probably watching more movies than reading books. And like, that visual grammar is like really ingrained in us.
I get it. You're saying you need more female writers and female directors. Yeah, and totally. I'm on
well,
it.
Fuck yeah. No, but I do.
Well, that's true. I think there's less than 19% female directors. I don't know. That is changing. I made that up. Somewhere around there, though.
Let me ask you this. The thing that every example I posted in the article, every movie example had in common, is that there were women who felt obligated to say no as part of the mating ritual. That I'm going to say no as a test of your resolve. And that the no is perfunctory, but it's a show. Because the theory is, these are all written by men, almost probably every single example I cited, directed by men, okay. But the theory seems to be that women like to feel wanted, they like to feel pursued, therefore there's a sort of game where they turn it into a pursuit. And then that was the message with the Star Wars example, that she had to put up a show of, well, I would never be caught with a scoundrel like you, blah, blah, blah. But once he pressed the issue, you know, it's like, okay, you've shown me that you really want me. And if someone wants a more modern example, that's what the lyrics of Blurred Lines are saying. That I know you have hypothetical female I've written the song to. I know you can't admit you want to have sex with a guy like me who will pull your hair and really, really give it to you, right? But I'm telling you, it's okay. You don't have to put up that show. I know you don't like to admit you want this, but it's just us now. And it's now, I'm telling you, it's okay to be a sexual being with me because we both know, even though you've stated you don't want it, we both know that you do. Is that something you were ever taught or you were ever made to feel like you had to do, like to do a perfunctory no, or to, if there was a guy who's interested in you, to act like you're not interested or you're aloof? Did you ever feel pressured to do that?
I've never said no and not meant it. Like, if I was pushing a guy away, that's real. I mean, we do see it in the media. We grew up with it as well as you. I mean, we see the same movies, but those were made by guys.
Yeah.
We were taught that by guys.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I've never said no and not meant it. But I will say that I think that's taken, you know, my whole adult life to slowly chip away at what it is that I expect from men and how I thought I wanted to be treated. Yes, I thought that real love, or if I was desirable, a man would pursue me, and that maybe not that I have to play coy, but that I wanted a man to be aggressive. That's what I thought. And that's part of why, again, when I started dating, that was intimidating for me. And it turns out that those are not the men that I want in my life. So while no, I've never played a game of saying no while I mean yes, I think that that's crazy. I think that we have to believe what women say, that there are certainly unhealthy expectations that I used to have.
That women might feel like, or I think when you're younger and when you've been only, like you said, raised by the media, you might be like, is that what I'm supposed to want?
Right.
But you don't feel that.
Right. Exactly.
And I think with guys, like you said, maybe you do accept it and you're like, yeah, I do want that. But like, I don't think women want that.
Now, has a guy ever walked into your workplace, thrown you over his shoulder and walked out, and you've been like totally turned on and happy with that? Does that happen?
It cracked?
Yeah. Has that ever happened? Do guys just walk in? That's like a classic scene in cinema history. And an officer and a gentleman, Richard Gere, walks in, throws the woman over, is chasing. You wrote that he does it like he's picking up a suit at the dry cleaner.
Yeah, if somebody did that when I was at the office, I would go nuts.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're my closest. I don't even care if it's my boyfriend who comes in and decides to pick me up. I would pretty much just, I would be like, oh, honey, you need to put me down right now. Like, I would be
don't embarrass me in front of everyone.
I would be like, this is my place of work. How dare you? And I would be like, you made me kick my computer. Like, what is wrong with you?
But even if all of your coworkers stood up and applauded as a creator,
that does happen.
I would straight up be like, don't, guys, don't. Like, I don't know. To me, I would be mad at everyone. I would be angry. So angry in real life.
I would be so humiliated.
Yeah, humiliated.
Just
completely humiliating scene. Like, it made me wonder, like, oh yeah, were guys the only ones who determined what was considered a classic scene in movies? Because I've never seen that movie, but I've seen it like make a reel of like classic scenes in movie history. Like, were guys the only ones who were like sitting back and having conversations about, I guess the Academy is, they were.
Yeah.
Answer my own question.
Let's not assume that 100% of the women of the world would all react the same way to that.
Absolutely.
No. I think also, if it was agreed upon, if she's like, oh, okay, then she's agreeing. She's consenting. But if she's like kicking and fighting and like, no, then she's not consenting.
Right.
One of the big misunderstandings in culture is when you see something in a movie, are you watching something that's in there because it's a fantasy and never happens, and therefore that's why it's entertaining, because it's something that never really happens? Or are you watching something that is in there because it's a slice of life and this happens all the time? I fully believed growing up that every courtship, as they would have said in the movie, looks like this. The guy has to start like doing nice things for the woman, doing favors, whatever. And the Princess Bride is like this. You know, she has to tell him, insult him, tell him he's a scoundrel, whatever. And then over time, she will warm up to him if he does enough nice things for her, if he demonstrates his value to her. Because that's the way the relationships work in a giant percentage of the movies. Not like 20%, but like 80%. Because the plot arc of a romantic comedy, it has to play out. Like if anyone on this podcast is writing a script for a romantic comedy, I bet we're going to write it the same way. They're two people from the opposite sides of the tracks, either for whatever reason, culturally they're separated. They initially bristle at one another, and then over time, a series of incidents bring them together. And then they, 60 minutes into the movie, they break up and then they get back together. But that arc of in the beginning, they hate each other, and then over time, they come together. No one writes a romantic movie about a man and a woman who sort of always get along and they're good friends. And then after they're friends for a while, they like start dating and realize that's so boring. You need the conflict. So I 100% believed until, I don't know, a few months ago, that that every relationship followed this arc. That in the beginning, which is not how I met my wife, like obviously, but I just kind of assumed that that's sort of what it looked like, unless you're just doing like a blind date thing. If you're dating someone who you know that there's this point where that person has to pretend they're not interested. Now, the other element of it is, again, having grown up in, you know, rural small town, you know, this is a very religious community. 100% of the people go to church, you know, so the fact that there's such a Puritan aspect of it where it's sinful for women to have sex or to be sexual or to show too much skin or to wear revealing clothing, like that's all, those are all sinful things. So there's that element of it too. Like, even if she wants me, she can't even acknowledge that sex is a thing that she desires. So you also assume, well, like that's just another barrier I have to overcome. Like she can't.
Yeah, but neither can he, right?
I can't get feedback from her. Believe it or not, religion tends to have a little bit of a double standard about that.
What?
Where, for some reason it's super shameful for a woman to get pregnant or whatever, but all of the consequences kind of fall on her. Because there's always such a nod and a wink, like boys will be boys type thing. And, you know, again, this is in a Bible where, you know, the King David had his wives, and then he had the women he just had sex with, that he had like a harem of women, and, you know, and that's sort of, you know, boys will be boys. You know, God's not going to get in the way of that. You know, it's
But that one time he was with the wife of a soldier and sent that soldier out, that was not cool to that dude. So that was, God got pissed.
Yeah, he was messing with her property. If I wanted to argue with someone, and I have a knee-jerk reaction where I want to argue with it. Like, if I didn't work at Cracked, I probably would have been posting comments arguing with Katie's video, because I have this knee-jerk reflex of, like, you're not being fair to the guys. Like, mm-hmm. that impulse comes up every time.
Yeah.
That's why, because my reply is to be, well, then why are women constantly saying no? Why do they do this? I have to stop and think, okay, have I actually seen that in real life?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I thinking of half a dozen Harrison Ford movies where that happens? That's always the arc. Like, they can't admit they want his rugged sexuality. And even one of them is a Nazi, and she has to overcome the fact she's a Nazi.
Yeah.
And then he romantically forces a kiss on her, and that cures her of most of her Nazism. Speaking of Nazis.
Well, when we talk about, like, yeah, but women do that. They do say no, but they mean yes or whatever. Or, like, maybe if people have had that experience in their life where a woman has originally said, no, I don't want to have sex, but then stuff has continued and they've ended up having sex, and, oh, doesn't that reinforce what I believe, what I've been taught? Well, no, you're not really taking into consideration what's going on in her mind. Maybe on the surface it looks like, yeah, that's what happened, but you don't know why she ended up going along with it. You don't know what she's dealing with, or if she's intimidated, or if she's worried something bad might happen if she says no, if she pushes you off of her. I think empathy is important for everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think this goes both ways. I'll start with saying that I think men have to be empathetic toward women and understand what they're carrying when they enter this situation. And I think that women need to be more empathetic with men when we talk to them about it. I was mentioning this to Jack earlier. There's a lot of stuff going on in LA in the UCB comedy scene. There's a lot of, like, cases of sexual assault coming out. And I think a lot of my male friends off the record have said that not that it feels like a witch hunt, but that, and they want to be supportive of their female friends, but they're also genuinely scared. They're genuinely worried about doing the wrong thing now, and they're worried that stuff might be misinterpreted, or,
like, in terms of what they say in
what they say,
this conversation?
What they say in the conversations, certainly. So they're not feeling safe expressing their fears or how they're feeling. Or they're worried about the next time they hook up with a girl and something being misinterpreted or doing the wrong thing. And while my knee jerk is to be like, tough luck, buddy.
Yeah. Maybe that's a healthy fear.
I have to stop myself and be like, I hear you. I understand. And
good. And it's good that they are considering that. It's good that now people are going in and being like, oh, I should be really careful. I should be really communicative.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great thing. And, you know, obviously my knee jerk is to be like, well, obviously. Like,
yeah.
But like at the same time, I'm happy that guys are going in and worrying and thinking about this.
Sorry you have to worry about something, guys.
But I do.
And good for you for worrying.
Good for you.
The place it becomes unhealthy or unproductive is when they're afraid to have a conversation.
Totally.
Not around like, hey, should we take this further? But to have a dialogue about a thing.
Absolutely.
Now, granted, I do think they should be afraid to be like, well, let's get all the facts first, when they wouldn't say that about if Christina wrote like about how that tends to be guys' first question when a sexual assault allegation is made. But yeah. Nobody, when they hear that like your car was stolen, is like, well, let's see what the car thief has to say about
this.
Did you
leave the keys in the ignition?
Right. Yeah. Maybe no, you let them borrow your car and forgot about it or changed your mind. So there's actually a recent episode of This American Life, but this girl went to like a nightlife hotspot. That sounds really old right now. And she would go up to any guy who like wolf whistled or cat called her. I don't know why animals get such a bad rap, but go up and ask them like what they were hoping to accomplish. And the conversation that they had was basically, she started talking to this one guy who was like really fun loving and like, you know, good natured guy. But he was like, yeah, sometimes I'll walk up to a group of girls and slap one of them on the ass. And she was like, well, that's terrible. That's like essentially sexual assault. And his response was, no, they always smile and they always seem to like it. And she was like, well, what you might not be considering is that women are always afraid of being like physically assaulted. Mm-hmm. And they might be smiling at you when you like whistle or say something gross to them or slap them on the butt. They might be smiling because they're afraid you're going to hurt them. And like that had never occurred to the guy, and like it blew his mind. It was like Neo in the Matrix. He was like, what? But then, and this goes back to what I was saying about the doctor thing, which would seem to be crazy that doctors wouldn't believe when a female patient is telling them her symptoms. The guy eventually was like, yeah, but I'm pretty sure these girls were cool with it. Like, he just went back. He wouldn't believe her. It was insane.
I think different when it's me.
Right.
Yeah. And nobody wants to believe, like, oh, I just, you know, I've been slapping girls on the butt and they've all been afraid.
Right.
This whole time. Of course, I'm sure emotionally he was like, no, but I'm sure that they were fine.
Right. It's,
you know?
It's what Jason was talking about with, like, the rapists are guys in alleyways with black ski masks and knives. They're not guys like me. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not guys who are being funny and, you know, just looking for a fun time and to, you know, get a conversation started.
You don't have to be a rapist, quote unquote, to sexually assault a person.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
And that's hard to deprogram that association.
Yeah. I think it's just all about listening.
And it's hard. Yeah.
Like really listening.
Yeah. Like if someone came up and slapped me on the ass, I don't know how I'd rock. At this point in my life, probably I'd be like, back off, creep, you know, or something more aggressive than that. But
that was a RoboCop line, by the way.
Oh, that's right. I knew it was from somewhere. Gosh, I don't know. At different points in my life, I was afraid to be confrontational. You know, there's a stigma around that.
I'm very small. So if somebody comes up to me and does anything like that, part of my brain, of course, wants to be like, how dare you? Fight, fight, fight. And then
he's like, turtle.
Part of me is like, survive.
Yeah.
Like, get even smaller and mm-hmm. get somewhere safe.
I'm 6 feet tall. And if I had been slapped on my ass throughout my life, I would have probably smiled back at a stranger just because I am a coward and I don't want to get beat up. I don't want to get in a fight.
Yeah.
I would have been like, ah, that was weird, man, and just like kind of walk
funny
on.
Joke.
And you have a larger percentage of winning since you are physically larger.
Right.
I will always, like almost always lose.
Yeah.
Except I'm very fast.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
You
she
know,
is.
People don't know that. But I think that's fair. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here's the issue, and this may have just been my experience in that high school, may have been just my perception. My perceptions could be wrong. My perception was that the guys who did that stuff in the hallway who slapped girls on the butt, who had, like, not just the compliments, but the crude compliments, they were very successful with women, whereas I was not. And the thing that I mentioned in the article is that if you had asked me, if you shown me the scene with Han Solo and said, well, why haven't you ever done that? Why won't you ever go up to, like, the prettiest girl in school and, like she's doing something in her locker, just put your arms around her and then sort of force the issue? It would not have been, well, sir, you know, consent is important. It would have been, I'm not Han Solo. Mm-hmm. I'm not handsome like Harrison Ford. I'm not a hero like Han Solo. I'm not suave like he is. I would have to be super cool to be able to do that. The reason I can't do that is because I'm a nerd and everyone hates me and, you know, women can't stand me. And so I wish I could do that. And so I idolized the guys who could do that, who could slap a girl on the butt and get the smile. And they were never without a date. Looking back, it's not because they were harassing that was the successful behavior. It's because they were expressing interest where I never did. They were asking girls out. You know, that's women like to be asked out. Like, that's expressing interest. But that came with the behaviors that would get you fired at a job now. That's part of what was difficult in terms of shaking those attitudes. Like my ideal of what how a ladies' man acts when I was a kid was based on my perception that a lot of truly horrible examples succeed in that world. And I hated myself for not being cool enough to do that. Hated myself.
I think confidence and aggression have been woven together. And like you said, it wasn't the slapping the ass that got them the date. It was probably them.
That's probably the thing that they were like, oh, I guess I put up with that.
Yeah.
Right. The guy you saw probably was confident. And I'm guessing that wasn't the first time he had interacted with the girl he was slapping on the ass. And like he might have had reason to suspect that she would put up with it because that behavior shows some confidence. But if a guy who wasn't confident went up and slapped a girl on the ass, it would have gone much differently.
Yeah.
And who didn't have reason to be confident. But I fully understand what you're saying. The guy, I was just remembering, I guess I hadn't gone far back enough in my memory when I was talking earlier about locker room talk, because in like middle school, I just wasn't going to the right place that I lived. And when I lived in Ohio, there was the cool kid in school was this guy, Frank, who always pulled his dick out in class would like show it to you as like a joke. And he had like the hot girlfriend that everybody wanted to date. And he was certainly the sort of person who would have the sorts of conversations that, Jason, I think you were the first to refer to them as locker room talk, right?
You coined that.
But yeah, so I think the reason he was popular was because he was big and good at sports. And the fact that he was a doofus was like things that people were willing to put up with.
Yeah, that was just an added bonus.
And again, I mean, women consuming the same media as men growing up maybe haven't quite figured out that they don't like that kind of behavior, especially in high school. You're testing it out. You're just exploring this. And we see it too. We also expect to be treated like that.
I agree.
At that point.
Yeah. And I think 75% of those smiles, 75% of the smiles in high school in general, because high school is terrible, were hiding pain, discomfort. Let's
bump it up to 85.
85, humiliation, you know, just trying to get through it and being afraid.
Yeah. It's dangerous to assume everyone else has it figured out and you don't. Yeah. Like,
right. Comparing other people's,
just obviously the human struggle,
insides.
But
yeah.
Well, I had written a previous article about like how the world trains men to hate women, and I think that was written in the aftermath of that. Who was the guy who went on the shooting spree claimed it was based on having been rejected by? Was that Elliot Rodger? Was that his name?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm accidentally accusing some totally innocent other famous person with the same. It was either written in response to that or it was written in response to a similar incident.
It was written in response to the Rush Limbaugh rant about the young woman from Georgetown who went to the Supreme Court asking to have them cover birth control under health insurance, I think.
And the fact that the response to that was not condescension or objectification, but pure black hatred of women that resides an inch below the surface of lots and lots and lots and lots of guys. That's like a balloon. You prick the balloon and it, like a water balloon, and out this pours. That people are tend to be surprised. And same thing when you look in the comment section, and maybe this is not true of the comments below Katie's video. Maybe, I don't know if there were threats of like violence or jokes about violence toward women in there. I did not look at them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there was a ton of violent comments, but I think the comments themselves are violent frequently. But yeah, they're ugly.
I think women sometimes seem surprised at how quickly dark that gets. And there was that, one of the things with when Mel Gibson was having his nervous breakdown, like that voicemail where he was yelling at his wife and said he hoped she got raped by a pack of minorities, by a pack of Jews, he might have said. I don't know, but it whatever, imagine the worst possible thing. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And do you hear that? And it's like, holy crap, that's a guy with a mental illness. And it's like, that language comes to the lips of many men very easily and very quickly. You can see it on Reddit. You can see it on 4chan. You can see it any place where the comments are not moderated, where or where they're not voted on or whatever. When you see a woman doing something even mildly objectionable, how quickly the comments go to fantasies of beating her, killing her, raping her.
Mm-hmm.
I think every single woman I have ever met badly, badly underestimates the animosity that comes from those teenage years. Because when I explain it, like in TV shows or whatever, it's sort of played as a joke. Like you're the awkward nerd and the girl rejects you and everyone laughs at you. Ha ha ha. And it's, we all were awkward once, weren't we, guys? I can't express how quickly that frustration, that angst, that constant pressure turns into hatred. Because you do feel like as a teenager, you've been blindsided by this changing of the rules to where now your entire self-worth as a human being is based on the quality of woman you can get as a possession, as something to show off. And that you're now, the pressure in terms of, you know, having sex, the age at which you have sex, the quality of woman you have sex with, based entirely on how she looks. Nothing else matters. It could be a truly horrible woman. If she's pretty, then you're now congratulated, and you are now royalty among men based on, and the fact that your entire status is based on the type of woman you can get, and then women like cruelly lock this away from you. Like you're not allowed to have it. So they hold your entire status in their hands, and they like giggle to themselves as they play with it. That's how you perceive it. Because the idea that the women are just as insecure or frightened or nervous would have been laughable to me as a high schooler. If you had told 16-year-old me that's true, I would have become angry to the point of physically acting out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the times in my life in my teenage years when I got like the closest to considering suicide, it was not over grades. It was not over money. It was over the fact that I felt like I had been locked out of the thing that everybody else has, that the women had conspired to just deny me the one thing that apparently matters in the world, which again, 2 years earlier, girls are gross and they're just weird, gross kids. And then 2 years later, it's like, no, this is all that matters. Like every conversation is about, have you had a girlfriend yet? What have you done yet? What base have you gotten to yet? Like that's suddenly everything. And the people live and die over that. Teenagers kill themselves. They kill each other. They kill their girlfriends. It is life and death at that age that a woman has turned you down. So you never fully lose that. And I can find myself to this day, I am 41 years old. You know, I've been married since I was 20. I've been married about half my life. To this day, I get more angry at a woman than I would at an equivalent man in the same situation. To this day, I get more annoyed when a woman disagrees with me. To this day, when a woman talks about how hard women have it, I have this reflex action to say, okay, you know, you're an attractive female. You're royalty. You will always have a job. You will always have a husband. You don't have to work to have a relationship. You just walk out on the street and you'll have 30 guys asking you. Like, all of these things that were implanted in me at age 14 or 15, it's hard to get rid of that stuff. And every story I hear about guys using language in private, guys beating their girlfriends, the rate of sexual assault, nothing surprises me. Yeah. I'm surprised when people are surprised by it. And I'm annoyed when people act like it's rare. Like, well, where did he learn to talk like that? It's like, he learned to talk like that everywhere.
I don't disagree that it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I've definitely actually been surprised by when women started appearing in our videos. That was an eye-opening experience for me. Like, I think our first big video, internet party. Yeah, it was just like, holy shit, you and Katie Willard. Mm-hmm. It was just insane, the amount of just vitriol that was in the comment section.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that I don't totally understand what you're saying, Jason, but the ease with which that is brought to the surface by things that have nothing to do with the commenters and were not even in a remotely sexual vein is like mm-hmm. pretty surprising. But I think the balloon being pricked metaphor is right. There's a lot of that just below the surface, sort of an us versus them, and they have it easier because I never got exactly what I wanted. Kind of thing.
That picture that in the article, the guy, the Navy, the sailor kissing the woman,
right?
That came from, that was a piece of reader feedback. It was on Facebook or somewhere because we had featured that picture. I can't even remember what article it was. And they had sent, and I should have credited them, but I couldn't find it. But they had sent that link to like, there's like, no, watch the other photos in that sequence. Like she's making a fist and is like, he's holding her in a position where she will fall over if he lets go of her. But the photo's been seen by a billion people, and no one had a problem with it. And maybe some people do think that's his girlfriend or something, but like, there's people behind, like, smiling. Yeah, they're applauding like an officer and a gentleman. Like, oh, look, this is America playing out in front of us. It's a boy in blue coming. I guess a boy in blue would be a police officer. He was a boy in uniform coming home from defeating Hitler, and this is his reward. Yeah. He gets the prettiest girl and he's picked her up like a piece of meat. Like, I'll take this one.
The expectation that we're here for men. That's why we're here.
And that's the even more subtle and even more common part of it. That the hero gets the girl, like, you know, like in Speed, Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. And once they successfully get out of the situation, of course they're going to kiss. He has succeeded in disarming the bus bomb, and so therefore he's rewarded. And you could say, well, yeah, but she did that willingly in the script. He didn't force himself on her. But it's like, yeah, but in the script it's required that his heroism earns him the girl.
Yeah.
So the line of consent, it's like, yeah, but that was a fantasy written by men that you rescue the dragon. Or you don't rescue the dragon, you kill the dragon and you rescue the princess. And then now the princess loves you. You are awarded with the princess. Of course. Like, that unspoken assumption is in most of the movies that come out this year, playing in theaters right now. Like, that's, of course you're going to, and it doesn't matter how you spin it. It's like, well, in the universe of the movie, like, he demonstrated all these good qualities. It's like, yeah, but that doesn't mean they're compatible. Like, that John McClane can defeat a building full of terrorists, so, like, that repairs his marriage. It's like, see? We are right for each other. Can a man who kills this many terrorists be a bad husband? Like, actually, yes! It's actually overwhelmingly possible.
He's a dick. I just rewatched it. I'm doing a video on Die Hard. I read the book, and then I'm comparing it to the movie. They changed it in the book. She's his daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Hollywood. But, you know, of course, the hero needs to get the girl. And he is rude. He is a dick to her at the beginning of the movie too. There's like this scene in the bathroom where I'm like, dude, leave now.
She
deserves better.
They're having a disagreement about her changing her last name.
I forget what he says.
He's like, oh, you had to come out to the West Coast to... It's like a real toxic, like...
She's got a career now.
With like a fucking chip on his shoulder, like real hardcore. Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't even really thought about that. It's that same sort of just the very basic visual grammar of film is that... The men, it's their perspective that we're seeing, or they're the ones we're supposed to identify with, and the women are the ones who walk in slow motion, or, you know, are being spied on in slasher movies, or the stories are told very much from a male point of view, and the woman is the thing that the verb is being done to in almost all cases, unfortunately.
Even the cases where they're idolizing them, that's also dehumanizing. Like, she's this precious princess who all the guys want, and she's perfect, and it's like, that's not any better.
You're telling me American Pie didn't have a fully healthy view of women?
Well, okay. Like, when you were before the high school era, before when you could wrestle with girls and stuff, they were just your fellow people.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Let's go back to that.
It's kind of like... It is very taut, we know that, but like, it is the idea of like remembering like, oh right, women are my fellow people.
Yeah. I read this Vice article recently. I'm not quite sure what this class was called, but it was about these classes in London, I think, where men go in to classrooms, high school classrooms with little boys, and they just break down what their perceptions are of women, what their expectations are, like looking at a picture and like saying the first things that come to mind and then having a conversation about why is that? And like, and then at the end of it, these boys being like, wow, I hadn't thought about it that way. I hadn't thought about that. My mom is a woman, or, you know, my sister, my friend, and like saying like, I would never say things like that. Why is this expectation that I have? And I think that's really cool. And I wish it was, part curriculum, you know, in general. And that's all.
And
that's what I had to say. I don't know. Part of me, I just want to latch onto hopeful things, like how to fix it.
I mean, I definitely think that it is as simple sometimes as having conversations, because a lot of the stuff we're talking about are things that went completely unexamined. And like, that's how a movie thing comes to stand in for your understanding of reality is when you haven't like thought about, oh, that was just a movie, and let's think about how people who are just like me would actually feel in that situation.
If you ever feel like maybe you're like, am I doing this because she's a woman? Like, imagine you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would I like what I just did to myself?
Yeah.
Or said to myself. Because that's what we are.
Empathy.
Yeah, empathy. I like that you just went rampantly.
Yeah, I was just going through last night, like, all the movies I grew up on and, like, all the bizarre things that I just accepted in women characters doing. Like, in Goonies, the young woman, I think Andy, has her eyes closed and she tells her boyfriend to come into the part of the cave she's in, and he sends his little brother, and she makes out with him, and like, it's like, oh boy, like, he's really... And then it turns out in the end, she's like, you're a pretty good kisser. So she knew and kept making out with him. But like, it's just like, it's just such a like clear male fantasy. Like, it doesn't... Weird Science is that movie where like they conjure... Because the 80s didn't understand computers real well, they were like, I bet you could computer up a real person. And so these two like nerds who understand computers create a woman, and she's just male fantasy made incarnate. That's like all women in 80s movies that I was raised on.
Or Westworld.
Right.
It's hard. Yeah.
Like computered women.
Can I take a moment to point out how, and I realize this is an entire separate episode, but how progressive the movie Weird Science was, because the entire premise is that they want to use their magical computer box to manufacture. They're not trying to make a real woman. They're trying to make a simulated woman that they can like talk to, like an AI, and they can like have her body displayed in the screen, and they can ogle her. And then against their wishes, she comes to life and then has her own agenda. Like she's has magical powers, and she like goes, she has her own mind of her own. And eventually at the end, they get real girlfriends, and then she vanishes. And that's supposed to be sort of a metaphor. Like they want porn. They want a girl who'll just be their fantasy, but the real thing is much more powerful and stronger and has her own. And so now I don't doubt being an 80s movie, it's also full of lots of just horrible, gross things beyond that. But that is what it was about, because guys' relationship to pornography, like especially if you're a teenager, has been raised on porn, and then it's very frustrating that the woman, that the female shape, like talks back to you, because the porn does what you want. Like you want to see more, you're going to see more. And it's almost training them that you have a right to this, right? And that it's there for, as you said, it's there for you. It's a product for you to consume. So when you see it out in the world or in our videos, we have, you know, a female, you know, actress on the screen in a comedy video that has nothing to do with sex. And then there's comments about demanding to see her in a more revealing outfit or whatever. Because with porn, you could do that. If like, I want to see nothing but a bunch of butts. Give me naked butts, Google. And here's page after page of butts on demand. And those women may or may not have consented to have those photos taken. But at that point, their consent ends. You now have total control. And like the example with like Goonies or I guess a lot of these, it's unspoken. But the way it's taught is that everyone has a heart and a mind, and the heart has desires and the mind, you know. And so a lot of romance stories are about overcoming the mind and following the heart, right? Like there's a trope when it's the male on the other side of it, his mind is all career and money or whatever. But then he meets a free spirit woman who it doesn't make sense to go with her, but he loves her. And so he follows his heart, put all logic aside, he follows his heart to go with the woman, right? And so there's this division. Well, the opposite side of that is, well, her mind says no. She thinks she doesn't want you, but her heart, you know, her body is saying yes. Her you know, her desires is, and so it's presented like you have to overcome the mind to let her true desire. Like the most romantic way to express sexual assault is like that. Like it's she may mentally think she doesn't want it, but that's because she needs to listen to her heart or her whatever, you know, her instincts. That really, that's where the you really, you know, you want it language comes from. Like I know you're saying you may think you don't want this, but you just need to give in to your desire because we both know you desire me. And I think that's the message all of these are sort of playing out. But as we keep pointing out, those are male writers exercising. Like I would love to look at each of the guys who wrote these movies and then look at their teenage years and then try to figure out what scenario they're trying to correct. Yeah, like who was your Princess Leia where you kept thinking, well, you know what, if I had just pressed the issue, you know, she would have realized that I'm what she really wants all along.
Yeah, that would be sad. Let's not do that.
It would be incredibly depressing. I guarantee it. If you took the real scenario that they were rewriting, because a lot of writing is doing this, right? Like you're taking something from your life and you're portraying it the way you wish it had happened, like a cooler or a funnier version, you know, or the thing you wish you had said. You know, obviously Han Solo and Indiana Jones, these are male fantasies, right? They're power fantasies. These are hero fantasies. I think that for nerdy writer types, they just assume that those guys are out there living that life, like that can have any woman and that they, and I think that their frustration and their dumb fantasies became my reality because I didn't realize I was writing some other nerd's diary. I thought I was seeing an example of how the world worked because, you know, here's a scene where Indiana Jones is riding on a submarine. Well, like, submarines are real. Like, that part's not fake. Like, some of this stuff is real. You know, he went to Egypt. Egypt's a real place. I didn't make that up. So it's legitimately hard for a human brain to figure out which parts of this are real and which parts are fantasy. But yeah. I think you can see by the way guys act to this day, even, and things are better now. I think things are absolutely better than they used to be. But even to this day, one reason we like a show like Mad Men is there are many guys out there who think, man, I wish it was like that again, where, you know, men could just be men. You could just go up and just, you know, just grab a woman. And if they were transported back to the 1950s, this is still somebody's fantasy. That's the thing.
Yeah.
If I had to pick one scene from Mad Men that I remember, it's when they go have that picnic and just like throw their garbage in the park.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that same idea, but for environmentalism. That's what I fantasize about, just being able to fucking dump
garbage. That's
definitely
not what I
everywhere.
Thought you were going to say.
yeah. The thing you raised about the comments in our comments section is a good point. And I think that might be something that adults might not realize now, is that like, you basically don't just have to talk to your kids about sex. You probably also have to talk to them about porn too, because porn is like so readily available. And it really does seem to be informing the attitudes of a lot of our, I'd assume, much younger commenters, hopefully, maybe not.
Yeah.
Anyways, any final thoughts?
I just want to say what I said at the beginning of the article, which is, there's a distinct difference between saying these behaviors and thoughts are shockingly common versus therefore it's okay. It's not okay. My thesis is not you can't get mad at people when there's a sexual harassment scandal because we're all doing it. I'm saying the sickness runs way deeper than you think, and it's worse than you think. It is worse than you think. I can't press that home enough. We've been trained, a lot of guys... The fact that there's been progress and it's not as okay to say these things, the only lesson they learned was to stop saying them near a microphone. The attitudes are still there. And I'm saying that you can see those. I keep throwing out examples of like comment sections, things like that, to try to prove the attitudes are still lurking around inside the skulls of guys you pass on the street every day. Even if they've learned to hide it or learned that it's not PC to say those things. I'm trying to bring that out. That's why there's such a confessional element to that article. That's like, my attitudes are toxic, like, and even more so than they should be to this day. That doesn't excuse it. I wouldn't excuse it in myself. If I behave that way toward an employee, I'm telling Jack right now to fire me. Don't give me a warning. Like, fire me, because I know better. Like, I'm saying I know better. I have no excuse. But I think even now we do not in any way think hard enough about the messages we send boys growing up. And especially during those key years, the stuff that comes into their brains matters.
Yeah.
The porn they look at, the conversations they hear from other kids, the things you tell them as a parent, the movies they watch, the TV shows they watch, the books they read, everything adds to their personality. Even the most inconsequential thing, a billboard they see, that goes onto the pile and that affects them. This is not excusing anybody. This is saying people like this are made, not born, and we are making them. We're all contributing to it. So yes, I'm going to be very blunt, and I want other people who have these attitudes to be very blunt about being able to confess that and say so, because that's where you start.
All right, that was our episode. This is Cannonball by The Breeders, which is just a fucking jam. If you're not familiar with The Breeders, this was the band that Kim Deal went and started after she left the Pixies. She's one of the great songwriters and performers in rock history. She's from Dayton City, which I love and hate depending on the memory I happen to be focusing on at that moment. I hope you enjoyed this song, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I really think it comes back to something Katie said. I think men have a hard time putting themselves in women's shoes, ourselves, I guess. I'll come out and let you know I am a man. Like, this is something Christina Hsu pointed out in one of her articles. If you've ever heard a guy ask why the girl he likes is into jerks instead of nice guys, that represents a fundamental inability to empathize with the girl you have a crush on, because literally all you have to do to answer that question is put yourself in her shoes. Do you want to have sex with people just based on how nice they are to you? No, you want to have sex with them based on a soup of hormones and memories triggered by fragrances and ideas you don't even know you have and like can't put into words. Anyways, hope both men and women can feel a little empathy for each other based on our conversation. At the very least, women, you have to admit, culture fucked us up pretty good, didn't it? Which shouldn't be a problem for women to admit, since they aren't incapable of putting themselves in men's shoes. All right, on the footnotes, we're going to link to Carmen and Katie on Twitter, as well as Jason. Might as well throw him in as well. We'll link to the Cracked article, 7 Reasons So Many Guys Don't Understand Sexual Consent. That was sort of the main basis for this, as well as Katie's video, How to Know If a Girl is DT Fuck. We're going to link to a YouTube video of the scene of Han and Leia's first kiss. We'll link to a Cracked article called 5 Things Women Want the Most. That's the Christina Hsu article that talks about women wanting to be believed by their doctors, and among other things. Link off to the Cracked article, Everything a Woman Should Know Before She's Groped, and another one of our articles called 5 Ways Modern Men Are Trained to Hate Women. Finally, we'll link to the obituary for the nurse in that V-Day photo, the woman being kind of bent over backwards and kissed sort of against her will. And finally, a Vice article called I Want a Feminism Class for Boys that makes a pretty compelling argument that that should be a thing. Anyways, that is going to do it for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to engineer Brett, who you can follow on Twitter at Brett, R-A-D-E-R. You can follow me at Jack_O-B-R-I-E-N. And we'll be back next week with more podcasts. Talk to you guys then. Thanks again to The Books for sponsoring today's podcast. They have the freshest premium flowers you can buy, freshly cut from sustainable and responsible farms on the side of a frickin' volcano. And prices start at a mere $40. And right now, listeners can save $15 off and get free weekday delivery. Just go to books.com/cracked and enter code cracked. That's BOUQS.com/cracked and code cracked.
Hello, I'm Chris Gethard, and here with me is dream analysis expert
Gary Richardson.
And we are here to give you a taste of a brand new podcast called In Your Dreams, presented exclusively by the fine folks at Casper.
We listen to the wildest, weirdest dreams submitted to us by you, our listeners, and we do our best to figure out just what those dreams could possibly mean.
I look over the side of my bunk bed, and there are Huey Lewis in the news.
You're saying this person might have interests in style and fashion specifically. You can tell that from that voicemail.
99% certainty.
Plus, we'll be joined by some very special guests.
the word mortality comes to mind.
Mortality?
Blood.
Bloodtality.
Subscribe to In Your Dreams right now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Good night.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.